From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Good to be back with you after being preempted yesterday by the inauguration of President Joe Biden. That ceremony and the first day of the new administration are our main topics of discussion today. Later this hour, we'll be taking your calls on your hopes and fears about what's next in our civic life. But first, President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris were not the only elected officials sworn in yesterday. Three new Democratic U.S. senators took their oaths of office from the new VP, giving Democrats control of the Senate for the first time in 6 years. That means Illinois' senior U.S. Senator Dick Durbin went from being the number two person in the minority party to the number two person in the majority. He's also set to be chairman of the Judiciary Committee, which reviews legislation having to do with criminal justice and presidential appointees to be judges and federal prosecutors. Earlier this morning, I connected with Senator Durbin over Zoom. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm going to go ahead and mute my video. You're welcome to do this. Because the conversation is taped, we're not taking calls for this segment, but we do want to hear from you later in the show. Okay, here now is my conversation with Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. Senator Durbin, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Good to be here.
I want to begin with yesterday's inauguration. What did you take away from President Biden's inauguration yesterday?
Well, what we heard was classic Joe Biden, a middle-class son who grew up with the uncertainty of the economy and loved his family dearly. Still relies on them for guidance every single day of his life. We heard him tell his story and basically heard him tell the story of America as he saw it. I really think he touched the hearts of many people who were waiting for his leadership.
And what do you make of his message, right? Obviously, the word unity, he was very clear. That came up multiple times in his address. Do you think that is going to make a difference in the operations and the way things are done in Washington?
It is no surprise to me that that's what Joe Biden had to say to America. He's the most caring public servant I've ever met in my life. Now, that's saying something because I've been around this business for a while. But he has a heart of gold. He really does care for people. I could tell you so many examples, large and small, where Joe Biden took an extra step, made an extra effort to be there when someone needed him. And I think that's the way he feels about his obligation to this country as president. He's exactly the type of person we need.
So the president, on his first day in office, signed a large stack of executive orders. I think it was 17 of them, rejoining the Paris Climate Accords, reinstating the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program for younger immigrants, which I know is near and dear to your heart. What do you think of these first actions of his as president?
What a great down payment for his administration. To clear the decks on so many outrageous things done by the previous administration. I never thought that many of those actions were taken with serious thought. I thought they were impulsive, 3 a.m. tweets inspired them, something that the president, former president saw on television, informed him whether right or wrong. And Joe Biden, I think, cleared the decks yesterday, at least in many areas. And got us started back to where we need to be as a nation.
I do listen to a variety of commentators across the political spectrum, and I have heard some conservatives complaining that some of these unilateral actions, some of which were taken, some of which were just announced before the inauguration, they kind of undercut that unity message. And I wonder, how do you square the president's call for working together with going it alone on some of these issues?
Joe Biden, our new president, has to balance serving his own values and the values he ran on and won on as president of the United States with moving toward bipartisan solutions to problems it faces. For example, he could speak to DACA as he did and make clear that he is still committed to these young people brought to this country as children, babies, infants, and who've grown up here and simply want a chance to be part of our future. And still at the same time, when it comes to our responsibility in the Senate, for example, of passing the DREAM Act or a new DACA bill, we need bipartisanship. A 50-50 Senate just makes it obvious. You need someone from the other side of the aisle to join you, or you don't have a chance of winning. So I think he sees both. Express your values, but when it comes to working out the details and specifics, be open to change.
I'm glad you mentioned the 50-50 Senate there, because 50 Democrats, 50 Republicans, Vice President Kamala Harris will be casting tie-breaking votes as needed, but she's not going to be there every minute of every day, and not every Democrat will necessarily be for every Democratic bill. Will there have to be some power sharing with Republicans in order to just make the Senate function?
First, let me say something about the new vice president. She was sworn in yesterday, marched all the way down to the White House area where her office is located, and then was called back in the middle of the afternoon to preside over the swearing in of three new United States senators. She's going to be a busy lady. She has responsibilities as vice president with Joe Biden, but she also is a key member of the United States Senate as its presiding officer. Al Gore used to say when he was vice president that whenever he cast a tie-breaking vote, the Democrats would win. So it's an important element in our governing as a majority, thanks to the vice president. But having said that, when it comes to writing a bill and putting it on the floor with a chance of seeing it passed with 51 votes or more, and sometimes you need 60, we really have to look at it on a bipartisan basis. My message to the members of the Senate Judiciary Committee as chairman is on the Democratic side, find Republican co-sponsors, make the change that you need to bring them on board. Make certain that we send to the floor as often as possible really bipartisan bills.
At one point last year, when Democrats were thought likely to win a bigger Senate majority, there was talk of eliminating the filibuster and packing the Supreme Court and extending an offer of statehood to the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico. Can you set the expectations for Democrats and Republicans, for that matter, about what they should and should not expect out of this 50-50-1 Senate?
You know, the Senate historically has always honored the minority in its composition and in its procedure. And the filibuster is one illustration of that, where one person's objection and a threat to debate can only be stopped with 60 votes of the 100-member body. A simple majority is not enough. But we have seen recently, in the last 10 or 15 years for sure, a real change in the approach to that. It used to be so rare that they'd write books about it, that there'd be a filibuster over civil rights or something of that nature. But now 60 vote requirements are almost a daily routine around here. That's wrong. If that's going to be the standard, then clearly I think we've reached a new generation of thinking in the Senate. We need to have a Senate that works and produces. We need rules that reflect that. I hope we can do it on a bipartisan basis together rather than some unilateral effort to change the rules.
Interesting. I mean, I'm trying to read through what you're saying there, and even President Obama talked about possibly ending the filibuster. He referred to it as a Jim Crow relic in his eulogy for Congressman John Lewis last summer. Is this something that is potentially on the table?
And it was a Jim Crow relic. Let me be honest about it. You know, I introduced the DREAM Act 20 years ago. I've passed the DREAM Act in the House and in the Senate, but I could never get around the filibuster. Civil rights legislation has died on that cross over and over again in the United States Senate. And I understand where President Obama is coming from. What I'm saying is members can overcome that and they can really put the filibuster back in a cage to be called in extraordinary situations. If they don't, there's going to be continued pressure to changing the rules to make the Senate a body that actually accomplishes something, gets something done. I think the American people expect that.
If you're just tuning in, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. He's the majority whip that the Senate Democrats have taken a majority with 50 seats, plus Vice President Kamala Harris casting tie-breaking votes as needed. He's also the incoming chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. I want to ask about policy. What are your policy priorities and Democrats' top priorities, to the extent those diverge, for the new Congress?
Well, let me tell you, the top priority is dealing with this pandemic. Too many Americans have died and too many are still dying. The numbers are just stunning and creating such sorrow around this country. And I'm afraid that though they might have had a warp speed discovery of a vaccine, the distribution of that vaccine is in a terrible state at this moment. Joe Biden has to tackle that immediately. breaking the back of this pandemic is absolutely essential to save lives, but even more important, or equally important, to get the economy back on its feet, our kids back in school. So that's priority one. Priority two is taking care of families and individuals who are struggling in this economy. It has to be done, or we're going to sink into a dark depression that's going to take its toll for many years to come. And beyond that, as the president said yesterday in his inaugural, we have issues dealing with systemic racism in this country, which we have to face honestly. And we certainly have a challenge when it comes to the immigration policies of this country. For a nation of immigrants, our laws are a mess.
Well, all those policies may have to take a backseat, at least for a while, because the Senate is also expected to take up the impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump. Is this a good idea? Is it necessary? Where are you on impeachment?
I tell you, I still haven't gotten over it, and I'm not sure I ever will, what happened on January 6th. This building, this Capitol, means so much to me personally, and so much to this nation. And the desecration of this building by a mob that was incited by the president to march in, on the Capitol and to interrupt the business of the Senate and the House did damage that I still feel very personally. I can see some of it still in this building, though they made a heroic effort to put it back in shape. And yes, I think it's serious. And I think those who were engaged in breaking and entering and killing a Capitol policeman should be held accountable for their wrongdoing. And that goes all the way to the top. The second impeachment of Donald Trump made history. We have a responsibility to consider that impeachment here in the Senate. I'll add one element, though. We are not just jurists in making that decision. We are eyewitnesses. We were there. We were in the chamber. We saw what happened, and to a great extent. More information is certainly needed to be produced, but we don't come to this completely unaware of what happened on January 6th.
And even if one branch of government sending a mob or encouraging a mob to go attack another branch of government carrying out its governmental duties, right? I understand where people say that definitely demands an answer. On the other hand, if President Trump is weeks or even months potentially after leaving office, is convicted and then barred from future service, there are millions of Americans who are going to see that as, at best, sour grapes, or possibly as sort of anti-democratic. How do you navigate that? Bringing people, you know, this moment where the president has said he wants to unify people and bring them together. There are still millions and millions of people who have been lied to and marinated in this idea that the election was not legitimate. How do you navigate that?
Well, the other side of that argument is an important one, too. An insurrection that was incited by the president, that was directed toward basically derailing the functions of our government and defacing our United States Capitol building. If we were to do nothing, shame on us. That sort of thing is reprehensible. It should never have been considered. And that's why the president left in the circumstances that he did. The American people sense intuitively that is just fundamentally wrong. Violence is not expression of political belief. It is something unacceptable, and we should make it clear it goes all the way to the top.
What about your 8 Senate colleagues who, even after the insurrection, voted to reject the results of the election? I mean, there have been calls for censure, expulsion, or even just a sort of more informal ostracization, isolation. What do you think about that?
That's a delicate issue. They will have to answer to the people who sent them here from Missouri and Texas and many other states. And they will have to answer to the American people who have decided that what they did was just grossly irresponsible. And this perpetuation of this big lie that, Biden did not win the presidency and somehow or another it was stolen. And it was a big lie and continues to be. But it amazes me how many people still are being captivated by these conspiracy theories. Shame on those members of Congress, House and Senate, who perpetuate them. And I think they will pay a price, certainly in the polls in their own state. It may be with the Ethics Committee in the Senate, too. I don't rule it out.
I want to end our conversation with a question I'm posing to elected officials. I want to ask every elected official I interview this year. this sort of big picture question. What is politics for? What do you think is the purpose of politics?
To make our lives better, in the hopes that operating as a nation, a family of Americans, that we can help the less fortunate and show honesty in our dealings and give people hope that things that they cannot solve in their own families or in their own communities, we can solve as a nation. We've done it so many times. It's the reason that I've given my life to this business of public service. When you finally come through with a change that makes a difference in the lives of everyday Americans and makes it better, you realize that that's what government is for.
Senator Dick Durbin, thank you for your time.
It's good to be with you.
Dick Durbin is the senior U.S. Senator from Illinois. He's the number two person in Democratic leadership in the Senate and incoming chairman of the Judiciary Committee. Coming up after the break, we'll open the phone lines. We want to hear your hopes and concerns about the new administration and American government more broadly. That's coming up after a short break. This is The 21st. Stay with us.